Oh, yes. Well, unlike the class in there tonight, this is supposed to be a discussion-oriented class like your ones in the morning. The goal was to have some kind of a seminar where we could get together and talk about some issues. And what's really nice about getting a group of people together is that we found, like raising six kids ourselves, what works on one child doesn't always work on another child, and you have to be a bit flexible. So it's good to have all of your minds together on this and try to figure out what are effective ways of trying to solve some of these problems that face young people today. And these don't have to be problems that you specifically are facing. Sometimes they may be problems that someone else in your ecclesia or your family is facing, and you're looking for help on what's an effective way of trying to work through those problems. So hopefully everybody here can be helpful in what you have found. That's what we want to do is we want to pool the ideas together that you have found and the Bible passages that are useful. Although sometimes you'll find when you're dealing with people who are maybe going down a bad pathway, just quoting the Bible to them isn't necessarily the best answer. And so whatever you've come up with as effective ways of dealing with these things would be good and helpful to all of us. So we'll look for Bible passages that give all of us hints about the right way, and then we'll also look for some. That's the game plan, at least for tonight, in dealing with issues involving teens. And having taught high school for 36 years or whatever it was, I got to listen to teenagers come in every day, every hour of the day, and tell me all their problems and complain to each other about what went wrong in their life. And I was just amazed how often that a lot of the troubles that were like at the root cause of a teenage life, I would have said one of the most common was unthankfulness. And it's just been something that, you know, if I was going to deal with somebody today, I really think that biblically speaking, that's one of the things that the Bible makes very clear to us. So I found that if you're looking for some Bible passages, like Colossians 3 would be a good one to deal with people. I mean, you're trying to, like, reason through why we should have a bit of a better attitude about something or not be such a complainer. I mean, you could use Philippians as well about complaining, do all things without complaining and grumbling. But when you're looking at what Paul was hoping that we would do, is that just like we looked at last week in kids camp, where you're looking at how God had hoped that after he brought all the plagues on Egypt, and he saved his people, he hoped that they would be so thankful that they would trust him forever, quit complaining about anything, and just move on in life in faith, trusting him. But it didn't work. So maybe we could read Colossians 3. I guess you could start like at verse 14 to 17. And can we read like the reading? Go around the circle, and how about we go counterclockwise and start with Joanne.
Verse 14?
Start at 14, yep.
And above all things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your heart, to the which also ye are called in one body, and be thankful.
Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.
So did you notice twice in those passages, verse 15 at the end, and then again the last verse there, verse 17, the idea of giving thanks comes up twice. Now, I really believe as people that we would be a lot happier and we would have a lot more peace and contentment if we could just learn to be thankful for what God has done in our lives. And that would actually diffuse a lot of the complaining and the grumbling and things like that. But that's just something that I had noticed about of young people. And I also found out that a lot of teenagers were not content with their life. They always wanted more. They wanted the life that you have. Or they would tell each other about what they have and the toys that they get and, you know, what trips they get to go on and all these different things. And they became very discontent with their life. So I'd also recommend that you have handy Philippians 4. And maybe we could just start reading it. 6, because these are just good reminders for us about all things, and I'm just wanted to start out with this is just general stuff, and then we'll look at some of the specifics. So I don't know where we got to, but can we just do Philippians 4 verses 6 to 13?
Have no anxiety about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes will keep your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus.
Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, and whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things which ye have both learned and received, and heard, and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you.
But I rejoice in the Lord greatly, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but in the last opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of you, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content.
I know both how to be base, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me.
Now, that's the secret of life to Paul. I mean, what got through Paul through all the things that he went through and all the things he suffered and all the situations he had to deal with, the secret of life for him was that he had learned that in whatever state he was to be content. And that is that's something we should all aim at. I really do believe that for all of us here, when you're going through troubles, contentment is one of those things that helps you get through your problems. You really believe God's in control. God's going to use your situation of your life to try to help you develop the faith that saves. And you learn then to be content with whatever he gives us. But how you communicate that to someone who's going down a pathway that's not so good, they may not even be ready to listen to passages. But for all of us that are here today and we're trying to like stick to the Bible, I think those are good things to keep in mind for diffusing a lot of our problems. Now, the issue that came up that people put in the box, just so you can see, and it was good of you guys, you did put in some things for us to at least have a look at. One of them was on alcohol, the use of alcohol, and either a person or their friends in this was getting too much into alcohol. And their question is, if the Bible condemn the use of alcohol, then how do you help somebody who's going down a pathway where they're beginning to drink alcohol and you're concerned that they start drinking too much? Now, it's a valid question because it's true. The Bible doesn't condemn the use of alcohol. Probably most people in Bible times were drinking alcoholic beverages. They would drink wine all the time. Or if you lived in a cultural area like Germany, you would find that, from what I have been told, that German Christadelphian kids grow up drinking alcohol from very early ages. When my son was over in Germany, he just said, "Dad, I can't believe it. Everybody at every meal, all the kids are served alcohol." I was like, and that's the way it is. So, but the thing he was impressed at is that by doing that, parents taught children how to have responsible use of alcohol. And over here in the United States and Canada, sometimes that doesn't happen. So the question is about, as far as like drinking alcohol, there's two components to it. Because first of all, we know drunkenness is not something that we want to get into. And if you were going to like go back to Bible stories, what stories can you remember in the scriptures where people made some pretty bad mistakes because they got drunk? What would you think of, Ethan? Sure, Lot. That's a great one. You know, he gets himself, you know, his daughters at least, get himself drunk, and he fathers kids by his own daughters. So that's a good one. That would be like Genesis 19, maybe? Genesis 19. So it's close. That's good. I think it's Genesis 19. So that's a good one, because that's right after the deliverance from Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 19. What else? What other ones can you think of? Really? Noah. It's another good one. So that you've got that situation with Noah when he got drunk and he drank too much, and the kids come in and uncover his nakedness. So that's a good one. And what's another one? There's actually one more good one. Nadab and Abihu. Those are my three favorites, really, for trying to...
Leviticus 10, Nadab and Abihu.
Yeah, that's right, Leviticus 10. So Nadab and Abihu is so good because that was the first day that the law of Moses was operating. You talk about the weaknesses of the law. On the very first day that the law was in operation for the community of Israel, there were only five priests. There's Aaron, the high priest, and then his four sons. And on the very first day, two of them were struck dead, and now you only have three priests. And it was because of alcohol. At least that seems to be a big part of it. Because as soon as that happened in Leviticus 10, God immediately says, all right, you're not going to be drinking strong drink and stuff like that when you serve as priests. You can't do that when you come into his presence. So I think those are good ones to warn all of us that we don't want to get into that situation where we have to live with the consequences of drinking too much alcohol. Now, you also have New Testament passages that, because we know that drunkards will not be in the kingdom. Now, that doesn't mean...
The work of the flesh.
Yeah, well, that's right. So, you know, you've got passages in the Corinthians where the drunkards, when he makes his list, that drunkards won't be in the kingdom. But, you know, that would be, I don't think that's necessarily somebody who gets drunk once. I mean, a lot got drunk and made a mistake, but that doesn't mean he's written off as not being in the kingdom. This would be somebody who leads a way of life of drunkenness. So, the question I think the person's trying to get at is, how do you help somebody understand that if they start drinking alcohol socially, that they may be going down a pathway that's possible that that will lead to, like, overuse of alcohol, especially if it's the kind of person that it has those tendencies? And I think some people do. Just genetically, some of us are more likely to go towards alcohol for a solution to the problems of life than others. I know I was never interested in drinking alcoholic beverages. I don't even like the way they taste. I have enough trouble getting the wine down on Sunday morning. Your wine up here was like, ugh. It's like, compared to what I'm used to. And the Australian stuff is even worse. But if you're the kind of person that likes that, I've seen people like that. I've known kids at school like that. I've seen some of my family members are more have a more of a tendency to like alcohol than others. So how do you help somebody who has those tendencies that you're seeing in them that they may go down that pathway you've seen where maybe they got drunk once, and you're trying to warn them that you don't want to go down this pathway? How do you help them without them hating you? Really is what that amounts to. How do you become a helpful person in their life to intervene in an effective way? What have you found effective for helping people like that?
Trying to show the outcomes of the situation. So as when you look at the examples in Scripture, the outcomes...
So you can show biblical ones.
And discussing that with the individual as well. I had a conversation about that particular, seeing what the outcome was of the situation after they were drunk.
Yep.
And seeing the state that they're in, and saying, "Look, this is what that way of life leads you to," and you know, in those situations, unless it clicks with them, you know, unless they can get a sense for what the end of that way of life is, you know, it has to click for them. But all you can do is try to keep showing them those examples as to what is the end of that path.
So you're trying to get them to look down towards where is this going to lead to, and help them get to that final point before they literally get there in their life. Yeah.
Sometimes it's in those moments of clarity, maybe when they are responsive, when they kind of realize their moral compass kind of turns, all of a sudden they realize that there's a problem.
Hmm.
Trying to take. Lay hold on those moments to shed light on
to them. Grab them, yeah. Use it as a teaching tool.
What I found helpful too is depending how progressed they are down the road, it doesn't take too long before you no longer have to just look at Scripture, but can look, if you know them well enough, look at their own lives and some of their experiences with it, and actually go through their own experiences with that person, if you know the person fairly well, and say, look, this is what it led to on that occasion, and this is what it led to on that occasion. Do you really want to keep going?
And see, that's good, but you have to know the person really well, and you have to be a good friend of them in order to be able to be that kind of help. You can't be somebody from the outside just coming in and talking to them and trying to teach at them. You have to really be aware of their life. That's good.
Proverbs 23 is a good summary in talking to people. Proverbs 23 verse 21. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. That's the result. And some begin to see it. Some have, the Bible warns you of them. You're going to have to experiment to find out the result,
yep.
What happens. And in verse 30, they that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed drink, look not thou upon the wine when it is red, but it giveth its color in the cup, but it moveth itself aright. and it lost, it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. That's what it feels like. It's a hangover. And then thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. That's just true. It happens. That's exactly what happens. So the Bible tells us exactly. When you lie down and the pillow of God, if your bed shifting like the sea, is in verse 34. And you feel like you've been hit in verse 35. But the problem is at the end of verse 35, you go and seek it again. It goes in a circle. So all those are the results. What gives it to you? You know, what's just one cup of wine, and then you look in the car and linger on it, and all the side effects. It makes you poor.
Right.
It takes away your morals. It hurts you. The problem is you return to it afterwards.
So I think like when Alex brought that up though about knowing somebody really well, then you'd find out, are they the kind of person that can drink, you know, something once in a while? Can they afford to have a beer, or can they have a glass of wine at a meal? And no problem, they can handle it. Or through circumstances, have you found out that, well, they drank too much and got into situations like that? And so it's good use. You have the Bible in one hand and you have some practical things in the other hand to try to help them through it. And being their friend, I think it's most helpful when a friend of theirs can actually do that. In school, we used to try to teach the kids the effect of Proverbs that you were just looking at there, Uncle James, about the person who uses alcohol will end up a drunkard, will come to poverty. We used to explain to the kids in school as a reason that in the United States, if you end up getting drunk and fathering a child like Lot did, and that's what happens to you, you have to pay child support on that child for the child's life until they're 18 years old. So it's going to cost you a lot of money if that happens to you. I think it was always important for us to stress to people that although society today may write off some of the things you do when you're drunk, because they do sometimes, they just say, oh, he was drunk, it wasn't his fault. God doesn't. There's no indication in the Bible anywhere where anybody can use drunkenness as an excuse for misbehavior before God. And I think that's something we'd want to remind people about today, that God holds us responsible for what we do, whether we're sober or we're drunk, because that's something that we did, and we're responsible for those consequences. So anything else on that one that people have found useful for helping folks that are going down that pathway? Bailey?
Well, personally, just the family members, trying to bring up past events, regardless of how close you are. I don't know, like, God kind of compares drunkenness with someone who doesn't really use mental reasoning. They kind of go by impulse, and sometimes showing them what the results can be, or showing them what the results have been, isn't greatly effective. So, I don't know, I've always struggled with finding the exact answer to how to deal with this. So, yeah.
Well, and maybe in the end we have to pray about it, and that God will intervene in their life and do something that wakes them up to the fact that, wow, this does matter. And maybe it takes something more than just our ability to reason with them, but always pray about it, because that's probably, that's the best thing you can really do, is pray and then go forward. But I'll tell you another thing we learned in CYC, when we were having CYC classes, we used to really educate our teenagers and say, look, in your CYCs at home, when you get to be 18 or whatever, I don't know what your drinking age is here in Canada, how old do you have to be to go to a restaurant somewhere and have alcohol?
19
here? So, what used to happen amongst people in the world, and sometimes would creep into CYC, is they'd go out to eat as a group, sit down at a restaurant, and the ones that were 19 and over would think, oh, we're going to order alcoholic beverages. And the other kids are sitting there thinking, oh, that's what the big kids do. And that's really not a good time to do that, necessarily. You really should think about what kind of an example you're setting to those kids if you're growing up in a society like ours. So we used to encourage the kids when they went out together that nobody really should get alcohol as a CYC group, because you don't want to lead somebody down that pathway if they're not going to be able to handle it. So if you're going to do that, do it at a different time rather than when you're around the CYC kids. Anyway, that was just a suggestion we had for our kids back then. It seemed to be pretty reasonable.
I found very useful the kings and priests thing. In Proverbs 31, it's not for kings, Proverbs 31 verse 4, to drink wine, or for princes, strong drink, lest they drink, Proverbs 31 verse 5, and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. So you've got the kings not to drink wine in Proverbs 31 verse 4, and Leviticus 10, it's not for priests to drink wine. Are we going to be kings and priests? We are royal priesthood, says Peter. Those kings and priests, we don't want to pervert judgment. There's both of those.
Yeah.
Kings and priests.
And that is what too much alcohol will do. Let's face it, it does pervert judgment. And we all know that from watching the experiences of others. So good idea to like just Sunday mornings is great. And I guess if you go to Germany, maybe you'll get it with a meal. But I don't know if that happens anywhere else in our community. All right.
Also, all things might be, you know, lawful, but it's not expedient. You know, like if there is a, like, it's a huge implication of where, when it's used, it might be quite acceptable for an adult, a mature adult, to have it at a dining location.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in the company of others or potentially an alcoholic or something like that, it would certainly be the wrong thing to do. Legally you can do it, but it's certainly not helpful, and it's condemning to do it in a situation where it is potentially a volatile situation. So, you know, the situation is why the Nazarite had to refrain from drinking, the whole concept that was going on with the alcohol and the effect that it was having for the one that would take that vow.
And it's nice in our ecclesias today, a lot of them provide non-alcoholic wine. And when they're passing around those cups now, a lot of ecclesias will have grape juice in the middle. So if somebody is an alcoholic, they have other alternatives they can do. All right, and as far as the questions go, there's one on alcohol, and then there were four dealing with friendships. And the friendships were really connected. Two of them were just dealing with the fact that they wanted to know how to help your friends in CYC or in your family, who are now developing friendships with people of this world, and they're concerned that those friendships could take them the wrong way. And two of the other questions dealt with the fact about friendships about dating. So what do you do in terms of like helping people who are dating with people of this world, and they're concerned that those dating relationships would lead to marriage? So those are two, and I guess you can tackle them both in a connected way. So I don't know. First of all, with just generally with friendships, can you think of any friendships in the Bible that were bad friendships? So there's definitely Samson and the women he chose. I don't know if any of the ones he picked were good friendships, so they would be good. That's like Judges 13, 14, 15 in there. Caleb?
Simon and Jonathan.
Who?
Simon and Jonadab.
Jonadab, yeah, so Amnon and Jonadab, that's a good one. So, and that's an interesting case because that friendship was with somebody who's in the community. So you got to be careful who your friends are, period. It isn't just a case of saying, well, it's okay to have friends that are children of Christadelphians or friends that come to CYC. Amnon and Jonadab, they were both in the community, but that was not good advice that he got from that friend at all. Any other ones that you can think of to help people?
Dinah?
When she went out seeking friends of this world? Yeah, so she goes out to investigate. Where is that? Genesis 34. So she goes out to investigate, you know, looking for what this world has to offer. I think you can go down to Judah as well. You know, later on in Genesis 38, Judah, when he has that friend, Hiram, and Hiram doesn't help him at all in leading a moral life. So I think you can build a case that friendships in the Bible are really important. That's what I would think, as far as ourselves at least. It really does matter who your friends are, and of course the Proverbs would indicate that as well. But now, how do you help somebody who's going down this pathway? Because you can show them Bible passages, but what have you found effective to try to help some of our young people or your family members that are turning to the people of this world for their close friends? Any ideas? Because we're counting on you to be the experienced one. How do you help people that are going down that pathway? What do you think? Yeah. So could you elaborate, like, on how would that translate into trying to help them out in a practical way? We can't acknowledge that what you're doing is necessarily something we agree with, but can you still spend time with those people? Can you still try to get together with them, still do activities with them, but at the same time let them know that you don't approve of choices that they're making? Right. So you don't go join them in a life of sin. Instead, we try to draw them back towards us. But you have to spend time with them to do that, don't you? Yeah. And I guess the safe thing in our community is when somebody goes down this pathway, we all think the safe thing is to just let them go, don't do anything with them, and basically put up the walls. And but there may be some ways in which we could do some things with them, violating our principles, and that's the kind of stuff that we would want to look for.
Practically, one person is. Spend every Friday evening with the person, and they're not going to have very many other friends besides you.
Get a monopoly on their friendships. That's an interesting strategy. Take them to their favorite restaurant every Friday night.
Kind of works.
Yeah, well, I can see parents doing that. It's like you look for what works.
From a silly level, if you just keep trying. There might be times when they don't come out, but if you keep inviting them every week, eventually they will accept just to get you off their back, if nothing else. And if you just keep trying, and you are a true friend to them, and you do want good things for them, they will see that. I think a lot of the time, myself included, we just give up too easily. You know, they turn us down once. We're like, well, I did my duty. I invited you to CYC, and now we're done. But if you just keep trying.
Well, that's the difference between duty versus love and care and concern. It's if you care and concern, we want to keep going after them. Any other suggestions about how to help with that? Now, what if it's a situation where it isn't just a friendship now? What if it's a friendship of where now somebody's dating somebody in this world, and you're concerned about the fact that you know they're dating them? Maybe they don't even tell the Christadelphians because they're afraid what will happen. So they're just sort of like secretly dating in the world. How can you help somebody in that situation without making them angry at you, or, you know, have like, I'm more righteous than you kind of thing, but you're trying to help them from going down a pathway that you think is going to lead to a mistake? Because we know it's very clear in the Bible. The Bible doesn't talk much about dating, but it does talk a lot about marriages. And if we know the final result isn't something God wants us to do, then why would we ever do the preliminary step, the preliminary one that's leading towards that result? So you've got lots of Bible passages, like in Deuteronomy 7, about not making marriages with unbelievers. In 1 Corinthians 7, you know, marrying only in the Lord. Now, the Bible principles are very clear that we are to marry in the Lord. The problem is that some of us think that, like I've heard some young people and parents even think that dating was a technique for preaching. And that's actually something that you'll hear suggested. I remember John Marshall actually put that in his book, the Christadelphian book that's called The New Life. That's actually in there because he got his wife from the outside and he thought it was an effective way to preach. Most of us did never agree with that, and because we've just seen too many cases where it didn't work, and it's a very risky procedure. I can remember a young man coming to our CYC one time and telling the CYC that he made a terrible mistake when he was young. He had a girlfriend at school. He thought he'd be able to hold her at bay and just have a relationship of friends. She came too close, got very interested in her, and was too emotionally committed before she had ever shown an interest in the truth. And he was extremely thankful that in the end, God, in his kindness, brought her to the truth. And she's still a baptized member today and involved in ecclesial life. But he just told our CYC at the time, he said, I made a mistake. I went too far on this, didn't realize it was going to happen, and that happened to me. So it is a warning that before you know it, you think you can handle it. That's like last week with Shibboleth. Wasn't that what came out for any of you that heard the Shibboleth from last week? That's one of the things they tried to illustrate, this idea that, oh yeah, I can control it. And then you find out you can. So we do. We don't want to let our friends go down a pathway, and we don't either, young people, want to go down a pathway where we use dating as a way to preach the truth, or we think, I'm going to date somebody and maybe they'll come to the truth later on. We have to be upfront with our friends and let them know where we stand. And we used to suggest in CYC that if you have a friend that you think is somebody like that in that situation, bring them to CYC. Get them involved with somebody at CYC from the opposite gender, not somebody of the same gender, not opposite gender. So if you have like a girlfriend, you guys, and you got some girl at school, you think that you meet somewhere, you think that she might be interested, you get them hooked up with CYC with another girl in CYC, not a boy, and try to get them linked up. And that just as a way of monitoring, you can watch to see what happens if you don't go to CYC. Do they still go? And you try to figure out, are they only going for me, or do they really care about CYC? Those are some of the things you can do, because we know that there are people in this world who will get baptized just so that they can marry us. And, you know, even that's in the Bible. You know, who do we know of in the Bible who got into covenant relationship with Israel just so they could marry the Jews? The Shechemites, yeah, and look at the mess that made, you know, back then. So the fact that people will do that, it's a clear case that can happen sometimes, and so you don't want to go down those pathways either. So what other effective ways have you found to help people that are going down this pathway, and we don't want to let them end up married out of the truth? Bailey?
I think it's because the Elfians are really good at scaring people from the end of doing what's right. Automatically give them the worst case scenario and then go with that, like, you automatically use all the bad relationships. But something that's also a good method would be something like Abraham and Sarah, or Christ and the Bride, or just different things like that, and show them the positive aspects of leading inside the truth.
Yeah. Of having a partner, or like Ananias and Sapphira, you know, I guess not them. No, but Priscilla and Aquila. That's what I was looking for. Thank you. But, you know, you can see, like with Isaac and Rebecca and different Bible characters, what a benefit it is. So it's a good point. Instead of just stressing the negatives, show them how what God really wants is He wants you to have a happy, powerful, helpful relationship in the Lord so that your spouse can help you. That's what He's after, because it's hard enough to save you, and then when you go, if we do that, and it's not the end of the world. So if somebody marries out of the truth, again, we don't write them off. Then you got to try to work with their spouse and try to make them, you know, and invite them in and try to win them over. I've seen that done as well, and it's sometimes that's actually worked out in the end. But don't assume that it's going to work. It doesn't always work out that way. We've seen a lot of cases in our past where people thought that would happen and it didn't. Or maybe it had happened 30 years later, and they went through 30 years of, like, wondering, you know, what was going to happen in their family and their kids and the whole works. So, Josh?
I think, one of the practical things is to talk to someone in that situation of, because they're so focused on the right now and the emotional connection that they have with that person, but you kind of just mentioned it there, get them to think about, well, what about in 5 years from now, if this person is, 5 years from now, when you start having kids, when you're trying to make a marriage work, or even 15 years from now, what if that person doesn't join the truth? Like, well, what kind of effect is that going to have on your own children, on your marriage? And it's so much harder to make a marriage work when you don't have the same goals. So you're maybe just getting them to look at the bigger, long-term future picture, not just the here and now.
We had a case in CYC 1 year where our counselors brought in somebody who had married out of the truth, and he came and told us all the things that happened in his life as a result of that he never had anticipated, and just started laying out for everybody, like, the things you just didn't think about, like when you have kids. What if you're a guy and you marry a girl and she takes the kids to her church? You know, did you ever think about that? Your kids are going to be taught in somebody else's church. And when she goes to the church, she takes some of your money and gives it in their collection. And it's like he was just going through one thing after the next that we just had, like, never even thought about. And sometimes it's helpful to do that. Now, that's a bit negative stuff, but I think you can balance that with the positive stuff as well and try to develop that picture. So anyway, I think that would be an effective way. So any other things like that you can that could help people out on marriage relationships like that?
The truth really worked in the Bible was when the person came into the truth before they started their relationship, like of Boaz and Ruth. Ruth is a Moabitess, but she left her people, she made her pledge, she came with Naomi and learned from her, and then she finds her husband, and then she gets married to someone in the truth. And I can't think of any example where someone went and specifically sought a husband or got a wife from outside and it ended well. That's kind of debatable. There's no real indication that Ahasuerus himself came to the truth.
But the example of Boaz, Boaz didn't only allow his own evaluation. The sisters of the ecclesia, the women, counseled him of the kind of woman he was.
Yep.
That's one of the things we do that gets back to the point of letting others evaluate. Because the heart's not very good at evaluating me.
Oh, it's great at that. Perfect time. That's what we think. Yeah, I guess, you know, the other thing you balance that out with, I don't know of any cases of people that did go to the outside and survive it, but I was amazed, and really, if you go through the Old Testament, in honesty, I was shocked to see how often God allowed Israel to conquer another people and take all the women who had not known a man and bring them into the community. And it may be that in their society, because women were in some way like so much under men for survival, that he thought it was that it was something that could work. But in today's society, I just don't see that as you know, before you know it, you know, somebody's going to take advantage of you financially and all other ways. And I just don't see that as being a great solution today myself. Yeah, Solomon, that's right. That's a great case.
Also with that, if they went and took a wife from outside, they had to have her shave her hair, cut off her nails, like be in mourning basically, and make herself as ugly as possible before they could take her as a wife. So God was kind of, I feel like, saying, okay, you really want this woman, I want to show you, you know, if you're not careful, this is what you're marrying. This is the inside. Like,
yeah. Caleb?
If you talk about, well, I know all the kids somewhere at work, and they don't answer that, God's mercy that, you know, he brought something out of that mess. But then there's like so many other examples like that, the things that I've heard of that just goes down. And they also, the example, you can stress the example of any other person before around you too.
Yep. And also, in fairness to the whole subject, I think what you really have to be careful of is that you can't just, like, in a very easy, superficial way, just say, well, it's okay to just have a boyfriend or a girlfriend who's a Christadelphian. I really believe that, biblically, what we're looking for are real solid believers, people who love God. That's what we really want. And you just have to be careful. You can't just say, just because somebody's baptized, that therefore, you know, that's a great partner for me. It may be that you're going to have to be a lot more selective than that today, and be a little more careful, and make it a matter of prayer again, just like with all the other subjects. You pray about it and look for somebody, the goal being that you're looking for a partner to help you in your relationship with God, not somebody who's going to turn you away or discourage you or whatever. And you're looking for somebody to help children to the Lord. That's the goal of the marriage relationship, and it's only designed so that we can have families and raise them to God and learn about godly principles in those families. That's what it's all about. So keep that in mind when you're looking for your partners.
It's a God-given second conscience. But if your companion has not wavelength, that conscience can't be there for you at the helpmeet.
Right. You saw that, like with Jezebel and with Ahab. You know, Ahab sitting there, oh, I want that field over there, that vineyard. It's no problem. Let's go get it. Like, I'll get it for you.
But it is. And sometimes the word doesn't mean, the communication, in a verbal communication, doesn't have to be there in a husband and wife relationship. When you're and brought up with the same truth, whereas if someone coming from the outside world, who's going to come in with the same concept, where that conscience that should be there.
Yep.
But just as another Esther and Ahasuerus, right? There was a situation there that was a little bit somewhat different, but.
All right, thanks for your ideas on all of that. And the last one that came up was internet use, which I probably think, you know, this is where, like, people would not realize how things are going with the younger people. I have heard of Facebook, and I know about social media. My concern used to be just with, like, the amount of time kids would spend playing video games. You know, and we'd see that in school, never got their homework done because they were playing video games all night. But now it's turned out that the internet has now become available for a lot more stuff. I mean, you've got, like, pornography available on the internet that our Christadelphian community has to deal with. Many folks have taken polls of our young people around the world and found out that many of them say, honestly, that supposedly in these polls, that they do get involved in pornography on the internet. It's too easy to have it in your house now. It's not like the Proverbs where you have to go out in the street and find the woman out there anymore. Now you can just sit down at your computer at home. Or I guess even worse, somebody mentioned today, you don't even need your computer. You can be sitting there with your iPhone somewhere and you can do stuff on your phones today. So it's all become so easy for people to have access to the ways of sin. And you know, when you look at things like Facebook, my greatest concern with social media today with Christadelphian young people is that some of us are posting way too much stuff out there on the internet, making it available for everybody to see. And my great fear would be that as young people, you might do that, you get married and find out you're posting stuff about your spouse that doesn't help your relationship. We've got to become more selective. It's just not, we don't just throw everything out there for everybody to see about our lives. And I don't know if you guys got some good ideas about how you can become selective and how to use the social media, how to become selective and pornography that's out there, and how to limit your time so that we have people today who the amount of TV watching in the United States is actually going, and instead people are just sitting there in front of the internet all day doing Google searches and looking for cool things, and before you know it, you've spent hours and you haven't redeemed the time, as Paul would say in Ephesians 5, before the time is short, and all of a sudden hours go by, and what have we really accomplished? So what are some practical things we can do so that we don't get stuck in those situations or get lost going through bad habits? Those are like bad habits, I guess you can classify them as. What do you think, Caleb?
A lot of the social media stuff, you have like a profile or a tagline of what you are. And even, and I don't really know that, but like, even with email, you can set, like, something like, you can set the settings for like the end of each email. And like writing anything today, like Bible verses, already bought it. And if you do everything with the knowledge that I've got that there, and if I am not consistent with, so if I send that, you know, I'm saying that I'm basically doing all the word of God, so then it's kind of like a second question to almost. So you say, you know, if I think I'm just not consistent with that, I'm becoming inconsistent and breaking the word of God and, you know, falling through it, but I believe.
So you called that a tagline? I don't know what it's called. I've seen that on people's emails before, but I don't know how to do it or whatever. So instead of writing your name, you just put a Bible verse in there or something. Because that's why it's called signature. Anyways, it was intended for a name, but it just became like a whole Bible verse, the signature of our life. But that's a possibility. You attach that. It's like wearing a Christadelphian shirt, in a sense, and then that's affecting your behavior. So that's a mechanism to try to remind us that whatever we put in there better agree with what we stand for at the bottom. So that's a practical thing. What else have you found that's helpful?
I've found personally for time wasting, because it's so easy to waste so much time on the internet. Just to fill up your day, and not to fill it up necessarily with anything, but fill it up to do with things with the Word of God or with the Ecclesia, work on a workbook on your own. It doesn't have to do with the conference or anything, but have something to fill your time that's not sort of sitting there twiddling your thumbs idly.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. And to me, that's been the solution of my life all along, is just get so busy in the truth, you don't have time to do all this other stuff. And it's just, because you have to replace it with something. You can't just say, I'm not going to do that anymore. You have to replace it with something that you are going to do. Yeah, that's right. So is that Ethan over there? Sorry, you're right behind all those lights. I'm in front of all those lights, and I can't focus on you.
A good thing I found is, you only go on the phone or the computer when you have to do something. Like, don't just go on there because you want to do something. Just do it because you have to do something.
So you discipline yourself to just do it when you have a purpose. Yeah. So practical. Sure.
Joanne? For internet safety at Heritage College, Dave Wisniewski put on some sort of,
A filter.
A filter, and only he has a password. Because I can't always be in my room, and I had 12 students, you know, so it was just, it's a safety mechanism that if you can't type in anything, and it filters out, so it's a good thing to have in each home, and the parents, or whoever has the password.
So that's an idea, filters. I guess you can filter like a router at home. I don't know if you can actually filter a phone. But if you're on Wi-Fi, you could probably filter the Wi-Fi system.
The software called NetNanny and those types of things for PCs and also available for phones.
Are they? Okay. Go ahead, Chelsea.
Time wasting if you're finding yourself on social networks or any type of stuff like that, just delete your account and don't let yourself make a new one. And usually accounts don't let you make a new account with the same email address. You'd have to make a whole new email address just to get on that account again. That's one thing I found about when you just delete it, and then you actually have to make that conscious decision to bring it back.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're almost like examining and kind of going, well, should I?
So what Bible passage does that sound like? If your eye offends you, cut it off. It's like, pluck it out. So
said make your last post about all the reasons you don't like it as well. If you ever do come back, people will be like, what's your last post?
So you gotta have to you have to live up to what you posted. that's practical stuff.
I had Facebook a few years ago, and I was getting caught up in it and spending time on it, going to bed worrying about what someone posted, where they were talking about me and thinking, like, worried about, it's ridiculous. And so I deleted it, and I went from, like, I don't know how many friends down to zero, but I wrote a list of everyone that I wanted to keep in contact with, and I write them once a month. And my true friends write me back, and I know what's going on in their life, and it's like real friendship instead of
6,524 likes.
I'm really worried. I don't know what's going on. I, you know, I find out 6 months later, or someone shows up with a kid, and I'm like, oh, I had a kid.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I find that like if you have okay, well, first of all, the reason I deleted Facebook is if you're like if you install your phone. And your fingers, like, almost thing for reaction is to click on Facebook, and you don't even go to Facebook, and that's your daily check. Containing too much of your head, and a lot of your time, so redeeming the time, and also doing all to the glory of God. Like, if you're sitting there and moving your finger up and down a screen, probably not giving too much glory to God. So, yeah.
So I do think you may delete the accounts, but I do think it's a good idea to look at what else could you do and to help out in somebody else's family, somewhere in the ecclesia, volunteer to do some more things. Because those are just indications that we have too much free time, really, is what that amounts to. And we want to spend our time on something profitable for helping, like Christ did. Can you imagine him spending time on Facebook, just like scrolling down people's lives like that? He was too focused on the battle to be fought and trying to help the people. Yeah, you just imagine tomorrow morning when you're having your discussion classes about how he spent his time. And that's what we want to try to mimic. We want to follow in his steps. So if those things aren't helping us, then we got to look for a different solution. And I guess deleting the accounts and putting all those posts out there, I like that idea, you know, about what's wrong with this, why I'm not coming back. Throw it all out there, and then you have to live up to it, because they'll remind us.
Well, actually, what we could have on Facebook is actually being friends with people, you know? In person. Lots of people have tons of friends they have never met before. They just know them through a person or whatever. And it's really weird. Like, I don't understand, but it's actually a really good habit. You actually have people you know. Nobody's safe. Not like,
you
just want to know
what's happening.
Yeah.
See, the problem, you can filter who you know, but we can't. Sue and I get on and we try to do something like that, and we just look at that and say, wow, forget this. It's too much detail and all this place you're supposed to go to run the filters and all that, and it's just like, forget it. it's too complicated for us. But for you guys, you know, you can actually figure your way through that. I get my kids to set it up for me. I have three friends. Who's one of them? No, my only friends are my family kids. That's it.
I found very useful 2 Peter 2 verse 20, because I think it's called the World Wide Web. Okay, so, well, after you have escaped the pollutions of the world, the knowledge of the Lord and our Savior Jesus Christ, they're again entangled. The World Wide Web is very entangling, because that's my business. I design cell phone systems and networks and internet, and it's been on my whole life. So young people came on to the World Wide Web years after we had been on it for many years. And it's a very entangling environment. There's a lot of pitfalls, and there's people trying to make money out of you. And that's why the 3G network, the engineers who designed it used to joke and say it stands for Girls Gambling, okay? That's two of the G's, and Girls Gambling and Games. Girls Gambling and Games. And 99% of the traffic right now is still Girls Gambling and Games.
Wow.
We include, because people actually gamble in their buying process. It's a gambling technique of trying to buy stuff and all that sort of thing. We put that under the gambling heading. And the girls is all the Facebook stuff. And, Girls Gambling and Games. And don't be entangled in the web.
Yeah. Has anybody ever found an effective way of helping folks who are involved in pornography? Because that is something that I think you're going to find in our community, that more and more of our young people, and maybe others, are getting sucked into pornography on the internet. It's just so easy to have it in their homes and stuff. And I guess you can get filters, but I don't know, even then, supposedly the filters don't really filter out all that stuff. I'm not really sure if they're, you know, some way you have to find a conscious decision to resist it and then stick with it. But what do you do with somebody who's like an alcoholic and they can't resist alcohol? What do you do when somebody's sitting in front of a computer and they can't resist pornography? Are there any, has anybody ever found any effective ways to help folks like that? I guess you could just say the easy solution is don't use the internet. But I mean, the internet's become such a part of people's lives today, and communications with email and all kinds of stuff. It's a little hard to just say don't use the internet.
I think on that, with the internet filters that you can get, they are pretty good now. That they are, you know, setting that you can mostly cover up. But definitely, if someone's having an issue with it, and they don't have any sort of internet filter, kind of guide them and direct them in the right way. Here's a program that I use, or whatever it might be, but some of the keys with it are if you can somehow have a really close friend, obviously of the same gender, and kind of as an accountability friend, and a couple things with that, with those internet filters, you need a password to get by it. If you know half the password and your friend knows the other half of the password, then there's no way that you can, go in the moment of weakness, just go in and take out the filter.
That was a great idea. Did everybody catch that? All right, that is an awesome idea. So that if you are the person that sets it up and you do the password, and you're worrying that in a moment of weakness you'll mess up, you only know half the password, and you get your friend to know the other half. I thought that was very creative.
Yeah, and then further to that, if there's still issues, you can set up the filter so that if you do go to anything questionable, that your accountability friend actually gets an email saying that you tried to go to this site or tried to do whatever. And so there are some tools that in that way that can help to keep each other accountable. But the key with that is having really strong, really close friendships with some people of the same gender that you can deal with these things. And part of the reason we're talking about this now is recognizing that you can get trapped into thinking that no one else has the same issue if we are struggling with it. And therefore we bottle it up, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. But you get to the point of no return, for example.
Yeah.
Whereas, and it's helpful with those polls for people to hear that, this is something that most people struggle with, and to make sure that you're nipping in the bud, that you try and pick it up, and do what you can.
I can see where that might be something useful for people that are married, even if one person knows half the password or the email goes to your spouse. Because hopefully that's the goal, is that you're trying to help each other out. And
yeah.
So if somebody has a weakness along those lines, you help the other person. Those are great ideas. I mean, if somebody would publish, like in a magazine or something, magazine, some of these programs you can use or websites or filters and stuff like that. Because is that something you could find just by doing a Google search?
Yeah, there's just kind of a number of different programs. Yeah. Knit Nanny is pretty good.
Knit Nanny?
Knit Nanny, yeah.
Knit Nanny, like
N-I-T.
Oh, Net Nanny. Sorry. I'll get it. Spelling is good for me. Net Nanny.
Many use that.
Yeah.
There are programs out there that you can route your router, like that the you can do filters on your router, so no matter what computer comes into your household,
it
will
block. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that'd be great for all the Wi-Fi users.
Yeah.
You know, so many people in the States now aren't even using the Wi-Fi. They're just getting data directly from their service provider, but you can't do that. But at least you can control the Wi-Fi stuff going through your home. Oh, that's great.
On the game front, too, remember that the third G, of course, it's a violent game. But certainly it will affect our whole community in the future, because if ever we try to say that we are conscientious objectors of the game, it is a major tribunal. So the first thing they're going to do is get hold of our tracks to find out if our kids have been playing violent games. Mm. And that's one of the things that's going to be a big problem for our whole community.
So remember that, guys, when those foam things are out there tomorrow on the dock. Somebody's snapping videos.
They're going to affect the whole community. Because they've done that recently. When people start claiming, when they look at people who have to appear before tribunals, expert witnesses, they see the guy's computers, look at what you've been doing, and see if your destiny is honest.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And overall, just remember that God is always watching. We can have as many filters, blocks, whatever we want. God knows. He's always there. We can hide it, but just like Christ knew that Judas was going to betray him, God knows when we are failing him. Just be conscious of that.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's when you have an awareness of angels with you all the time. You're aware that your angel's there to help you, aware of what we do, mistakes we make. Hopefully that consciousness, that raising that consciousness and awareness of God, to where you develop, like we were looking at this morning, the relationship concept. God really wants, Jesus really wanted his disciples to have a relationship with God, to where they didn't want to let him down. So they could be like a Joseph and say, how can I do this great evil and sin against God? That's really what we all want to get to eventually. But sometimes in the meantime, we're trying to find effective ways to get to that point. So, is that, I don't even know what time it is. I can't see anything anymore. Open up my computer. We're probably close. I got 9:59. Was that good enough? Seth, are you awake?
I think we have our devotion left.
Yeah.
1 minute.
Oh, really?
We might make that 5. But,
sorry.
Thank you.
What time are we supposed to stop?
This is good.
Sorry. Thanks for all your ideas tonight, though, everybody. That was good. And I got a list of like a million more things we could have done. But I think it's good to talk about the things that you guys are facing. And that's what we want to do here.